It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Geology researchers from UW-Oshkosh do field work at Jurassic National Monument in Utah, what the U.S. Bureau of Land Management calls the densest concentration of Jurassic-aged dinosaur bones ever found. We explore how this quarry provides clues to ancient climate, and you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question or comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Joseph Peterson is a geology professor at UW-Oshkosh. Joe, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, this is your final day of research at the site in Utah. You're there now. Paint a picture for us. What do you see?
Well, right now I'm looking out over kind of the desert badlands of Jurassic National Monument. The sun is just peeking up over the ridge, so there's some cool dark shadows being cast in some of the valleys, but the desert's just kind of waking up right now.
Oh, it just sounds breathtaking. What do you love it about it there? I mean, I'm sure this is not the first time you've been there.
No, this is actually our 12th field season out here at Jurassic National Monument. We were just discussing this, my crew and I, last night, but what is it that keeps bringing us out here every year? And, I mean, there's a camaraderie in camp. We usually have students and volunteers that you develop some good relationships with. It's hard work, but it's rewarding. Like, we're always finding something new and interesting.
This quarry, the Cleveland Lloyd Dinosaur Quarry at Jurassic National Monument, contains fossils from millions of years ago. Why is understanding what happened then so important to today?
Well, the late Jurassic period in North America was pretty unique. There's really nowhere on Earth today exactly like that. Like what the world looked like, what this part of Utah, for example, looked like in the late Jurassic, there's really nowhere in the world today like it. So it's trying to reconstruct what this looked like and what the climate was like in the ecosystem. So it's more than just digging up dinosaurs. It's trying to put them into a context of a living ecosystem at one point in geologic time.
It's so interesting how you keep putting the pieces together there, because isn't it that they just realized there was a humid forest in northeastern Utah? And, you know, that's been, I think, one of the more recent discoveries of fossil plants as well.
Yeah. I mean, looking at Earth history, we can see how the Earth has changed over time. We can see what some things may have triggered those changes in climate and changes in life. And so by looking at the past, we can kind of get a better understanding of our current time in Earth's context.
So your team is working near the quarry site, uncovering a long-necked dinosaur skeleton called Diplodocus. What are you learning from the dinosaur?
Well, just this week, we found some fragments of bones. What's interesting about this site is, first of all, the rock is very, very hard. It's really slow working. But we've uncovered a thigh bone, we've uncovered some ribs, we've uncovered a lot of vertebrae. But one of the ribs that we found was actually broken prior to being buried. So this tells us that this skeleton probably laid out on the surface back in the Jurassic period for quite a long time after the animal died, but before it was buried. And some of those bone fragments actually have bite marks on them from carnivores. So we're learning more about the relationship of these animals and, again, in their environment at the time.
It sounds like it could have been a pretty violent or scary place. I mean, how did all these carcasses of so many animals end up in this one spot, this one quarry?
Well, in the main Cleveland Lloyd Dinosaur Quarry, that's really been the big question for about 100 years now. What makes the site unique isn't just that it's the most dense concentration of Jurassic bones, but also that we have three times as many predators as prey, and most of those predators are juvenile. So we're still trying to figure out why we have so many predators, especially the dinosaur Allosaurus, which is by far the most abundant animal here. But over the last 10 to 12 years, my colleagues and I and our students have been studying the sediment that is around the bones. We've been looking at the chemical signatures left in the rock and left in the bone, looking at features on the bones, such as, you know, looking for things like bite marks, or did they look like they laid around at the surface for a long time before burial? And what we're actually starting to find is there are some really unique signatures with the chemistry and also with microscopic fossils preserved with the bones of things called charophytes. They're kind of an algae. that was preserved back then. And we're starting to see a pattern that indicates a seasonal pond, or what we call an ephemeral pond. So this might have been an area where animals were congregating, like a watering hole. But during a dry season, or a particularly bad dry season, you might have had a large amount of die-off. And then when the rains did come, the carcasses got washed in. So it looks like it wasn't one big immediate event, but actually something that accumulated dinosaurs over a long period of time.
You mentioned that the sediments and the rock layers, and I'm just wondering about your work with paleontologists, because, you know, I would imagine paleontologists and geologists really have to kind of work together. Can paleontologists who are studying dinosaurs learn valuable lessons from the rocks and the layers where the fossils are embedded?
Absolutely. And actually, my real background is in vertebrate paleontology.
Ah.
So we bring in, it's kind of all encompassing. We actually have geologists, biologists, and vertebrate and invertebrate paleontologists that have worked on aspects of this site and many, many others. It really is a collaboration. Paleontology is kind of the love child of geology and biology.
I've never heard it framed that way. That's fabulous. So it really takes all of these different types of specialties to work together at these sites to piece together what was happening so many million years ago.
Exactly. And, you know, if you think about it, if you find fossils, they're in rocks. So if you don't know biology, it's just a weird shape in a rock. But if you don't know the geology, then you don't understand the historical context or the environmental context of which that organism once lived. So we really do need both.
UW Oshkosh geology professor Joe Peterson leads students in fieldwork at Jurassic National Monument in Utah. Call in with a question, share a comment along the way at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. UW Oshkosh researchers are in Utah trying to interpret the history of a site that contains the densest concentration of dinosaur bones from the Jurassic period ever found. As we explore the excavations and this deposit of fossils, there's room for your question or comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have UW Oshkosh geology professor Joe Peterson here. Let's bring in Sarah in Oshkosh. Sarah, hi, what's on your mind?
Hi. First, I just wanted to say I find your research super interesting. I just love dinosaurs. But to get to my question, which is a two-parter, first, I was wondering, how big is your crew, right? Like, how long are you out there? And with that, are you working with any other doctors, any other fields? Just looking for a little more content of what that looks like for your crew.
Sarah, thank you. Joe, go ahead.
Well, our crew size kind of fluctuates. Right now, we're at about 10 people. Sometimes it's 12, sometimes it's down to 5, though we have had times when we've brought entire classes out for a field course, and we've had up to like 25, 26 people in camp at once, which can get a little challenging when you're trying to keep that many people alive in the desert. But yeah, we're also working. This research really is a collaboration with a lot of different universities, particularly my colleague Jonathan Warnock, who's a professor at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. So he and I have been bringing students out here since 2012. And we're also working with the Prehistoric Museum in Price, Utah, and their staff, as well as the Natural History Museum of Utah in Salt Lake and a number of other institutions. So it really is a collaborative effort.
Sarah, does that answer your question? Anything else?
Oh, no, that fully answers my question. I just like to leave with a comment of, I just think it's so cool, so interesting what you all are doing, and I can't wait to see more or hear more later down the line.
Sarah, thank you so much for calling in. Joe, why travel to Utah? Why take the students rather than do things in your own backyard, like dig for dinosaur bones in Wisconsin?
Well, we don't actually have dinosaurs in Wisconsin. They used to probably roam around there, but in order to preserve these as fossils, the animals would have needed to be buried quickly. And back in the Jurassic period, and actually most of the whole Mesozoic era when the dinosaurs were roaming around, the Midwest was, for the most part, dry land. So if they died there, they would just break down and they wouldn't really become good fossils. Utah is one of the most concentrated dinosaur states, if we can put it that way. There's new species being described from Utah all around various geologic units every year, new species of dinosaurs. So it's a great place to bring students. It's one of the best kind of outdoor classrooms for geology and paleontology that I can find.
That's what I was wondering. I mean, how does this field work affect the students who are going through the program, and how important is it to have this type of field experience?
I think field experience is one of the most important things that students can have in any field of study, really getting out there and getting into it. So we have graduate students that we bring out here, but we also bring undergraduate students that maybe have only had one intro geology class, because you can read about it in a book and you can watch videos about it and do classroom exercises, but to actually be out in the field measuring how thick units of rocks are, excavating bones, learning how to map a quarry, you're surrounded by it. So you really, it kind of becomes part of you in a way.
You're surrounded by it, and you're living it because you're out there camping as well, you know, near the site. What is a typical day like?
We usually wake up around 6:30, have a quick breakfast, and for the last week or so, it's been hiking out to our long-necked dinosaurs we call a sauropod, our sauropod site, which is about a mile away, but it's over pretty rough terrain. And then while we're out there, it's kind of laying on the rock and slowly chipping away to expose more bones and map the site, but also remembering to drink lots of water while we're out here too. And then we usually stop around 3:30 or 4 because it's starting to get really, really hot and we have a long walk back and we're running low on water. And then we kind of just cool off for a little while, rehydrate, and then we start dinner. And then in the evening, we'll play games or have a campfire or something like that. Just kind of hang around camp and rest up and talk about the day and talk about what the plans are for the next one.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. Let's go to Kay in Berlin. Kay, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. This is such a fascinating subject. But I was wondering, is it possible to get DNA off of any of the bones, or possibly if you find hair or anything like that, is there any possibility of bringing them back?
Well, I think that, like, the Jurassic Park idea where we could resurrect dinosaurs from DNA, the bones that we have out here are far too old to really preserve DNA. DNA breaks down pretty quickly, actually. So in more recent dinosaur units, what we call like late Cretaceous material, there have been some fragments of DNA extracted, but not enough that we could do any kind of reconstruction like that. Not to mention there's been about 6 movies, I think, that show that's a bad idea. But it is something that, you know, people have talked about. And actually, if you look at it from an evolutionary perspective, we still have a form of dinosaur alive today, and that's birds. They're in the same category of life with dinosaurs as kind of we are with primates. You know, we're primates and other apes and stuff. We share a common ancestor, and birds and dinosaurs do as well. So we can learn a lot about dinosaur behavior from looking at things like birds and crocodiles and reconstruct them that way, but probably not bringing them back Jurassic Park style.
Joe Peterson with us, professor of geology at UW-Oshkosh, as we talk about the latest research from a group of students and staff at a dinosaur quarry in Utah. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Joe, you were mentioning the collaborations, and the site there is maintained by the U.S. Bureau of Land Management. How do researchers get permission to study or to excavate a site like Cleveland Lloyd Dinosaur Quarry at Jurassic National Monument?
Well, it's actually something you need to get a permit through the Department of the Interior to actually excavate and collect vertebrate fossils on public lands. And that's just because we don't want all of these things taken out of the ground and sold on eBay. You know, we want to be able to make sure they are reposited in museums so that they're available for everyone to study. So we work very closely with the Department of the Interior and the Bureau of Land Management to secure permits. And, you know, we start out with what's called a surface collecting permit, which we go out, and that means that we can collect things that are on the surface or disrupt a small amount of sediment around it. Nobody wants to go to a national monument just to see a bunch of holes dug in the ground. But if we do find something that's important and sizable, such as this sauropod we're digging up, this Diplodocus, then we can get an excavation permit, and we work again closely with the BLM and the Department of the Interior to make sure that we're not disrupting any, you know, fragile wildlife that might be in that specific spot. And then there's ways of kind of cleaning up the site when we're done removing the skeleton.
Do you feel the protections are enough for these sites to ensure that they remain abundant and viable for research in the decades to come?
I think they do a really good job out here. They have a program of protect and respect, right? So it's kind of when you go hiking in a park and it says, you know, take only pictures and leave only footprints. It's similar to that. What we really encourage visitors to Jurassic National Monument and other fossil-rich national monuments and parks to do is if you do happen to see bones or something like dinosaur bones weathering out of a rock, take pictures, get GPS coordinates, and share that with the Bureau of Land Management or park rangers. That way they can get trained paleontologists out there to help carefully, you know, preserve them or kind of just figure out what they want to do with that particular specimen rather than dig it up yourself.
Sounds like a really important tip there. Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Joe Peterson is a professor of geology at UW Oshkosh, and we want listeners like you to be part of the conversation on the morning show. Save our call-in number to make it easier when something comes up for you in one of these conversations. It's 800-642-1234. That number again to save, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.